Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On today's program, we'll be discussing an art and science collaboration that encourages critical thinking about life on Earth and how our species is affecting the natural world. My guests are Elizabeth Brando from PRI's Museum of the Earth and Barbara Mink from the State of the Art Gallery. Elizabeth Brando is the Associate Director for Institutional Advancement for Ithaca's PRI and its two public venues for education, the Museum of the Earth and the Kuga Nature Center. Barbara Mink is founder of the Light in Winter Festival of Art and Science. She is a painter and active member of the State of the Art Gallery in Ithaca, and she is represented by Art Matters Consultants in Washington, D.C., and Indigo Art Consultants in London, England. Welcome to the show to both of you.
Thank you.
The seed for this collaboration between the Museum of the Earth and the State of the Art began last September with a performance by Laurie Anderson. You want to tell us how that all evolved? Who wants to start with that?
Well, hi. And again, thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I was standing in line getting my normal daily coffee, and Barbara was standing behind me, and I turned to her and said, "Hey, the Museum of the Earth is having its 10th anniversary in 2013. Wouldn't it be cool if we did something fun, like bring Laurie Anderson in?" And that's how it all started.
Elizabeth had talked about Light and Winter and stuff, and I mentioned that Laurie Anderson was such a big solid at the State, and the fact that she was doing the program called Dirt Day, Elizabeth thought it was obvious. Uh-huh. And so State of the Art couldn't really get a special show together in time for that performance, but we co-promoted it and had a special reception that night, and we did our planning for this year, which is our 25th anniversary.
Well, tell us how you decided to bring art into this specifically, getting members of the State of the Art Gallery to actually take part in an issue like this.
Well, that was Elizabeth's idea, and then I was the bad cop. So we've never really done themed shows before. And there was some trepidation, especially among abstract artists, and among representational ones, too, because nobody wants to be too obvious. And when you're abstract, it's not clear enough. So my thought was for individuals to reflect on what their either biggest fear or biggest hope was and have their art reflect that. And for people who come to the show at State of the Art this month, there will be very brief artist statements and possibly some longer ones with people's ruminations about it.
Is the main theme really just climate change, or does it expand beyond that?
I think it's mainly climate change. Yeah, and our reaction to it. Do you think of anything else, Elizabeth?
And how is the museum dealing with that issue? I can understand the art part of it, but what is the museum doing?
Well, one thing about the museum, ever since it opened in 2003, we do have an art component, sometimes more, sometimes less. Mm-hmm. We do 2 to 3 temporary exhibitions a year, and then we try to have an additional art-themed exhibit in conjunction with the more traditional natural history or science theme. So we always have some type of art component. You know, the museum focuses on human evolution and climate change. And we can talk about the Nature Center if you want, you know, even more to extend our mission about climate change.
If I could just add, I mean, Warren Allman, who I remember working with to found the museum, I didn't do anything, I just encouraged him, and he did it, has always had a very strong commitment to art and science together. And I know the Museum of the Earth, when it first opened in 2004, was a partner and a venue for the first Light and Winter weekend. So that commitment has always been there. The interesting question is how it works and what the effect is, I think.
So one thing, when you think about even things like dinosaurs, you know, we get considered to be the dinosaur museum. Whenever you think of a dinosaur, you are thinking of art, because we actually do not know what dinosaurs look like.
I know, I've had John Gersh on the show, and we've talked about that.
John Gersh is fantastic, and he is considered PRI's artist in residence. We actually had a show of his work last year. So there is a commitment there.
Science sometimes intimidates people, so you have to figure out a way to pull the public in and not intimidate them or bore them.
Sure. I mean, our museum is definitely text-heavy, is data-driven. The nice thing about this exhibit, there is a smaller ancillary show of 10 works at the museum at the same time, but the larger show
by downtown. By the State of the Art,
Earth at the museum versus the show Earth. And it does make it much more accessible. I mean, there was something about glaciers. There was something about, you know, ecological disasters with fish. I mean, there is just this beautiful picture of a snowy owl, but it makes you think about, you know, nature and getting out into nature. And then it will hopefully draw you into what are things that I can do on a personal level to continue my interaction with nature and to continue to make sure that at the end of the day that nature will exist as you know it today.
I think you do need to play on people's emotions in some ways. You know, somebody brings their kid.
Different points of entry. This snowy owl
might disappear your lifetime if we don't do something.
Different points of entry, yeah.
How did you approach the artist? Did you or somebody from the gallery actually decide to come up with the theme, though? I mean, there are people who don't think climate change is happening. Were the artists told
at state of the art.
Okay. No, but I was wondering if there was a level of how they wanted to portray this.
No. The main discussion issue was how to do it and whether it would be clear or not. There's a very good show up at the Johnson right now on climate change. Mm. And some pieces, to me, work better than others, and I'm always a fan of less didactic preaching than more. And a lot of people are talking about Maya Lin's exhibit of What's Missing, where you hold a translucent panel over a projection on the floor, and then you see the words written, and there are some data points. The fish are gone, the octopus is shriveling, whatever. And it's fun, and it's super cool. What moved me the most was the exhibit on the first floor where they had old black and white pictures of the Far West by Ansel Adams, just beautifully framed, very simple, and then a huge three-wall mural, essentially. It wasn't painted on the walls, painted on Tyvek, of the evolution of the Wild West.
Wow.
So from prehistoric times to the cowboys to the death of certain mammals. And just that juxtaposition and the scale of it really said it all. And I think that's where the power of art can come in, is it makes you think of things in a way, not only, as Elizabeth was explaining, understanding viscerally what the science is talking about, but it makes you feel things. And as you were just saying, Tish, you've got to be able to feel it as well as understand it intellectually.
When I think about this subject, I think about Rachel Carson's incredible title of her book, Silent Spring, because that's, to me, what the epitome is. Mm-hmm. We're losing. You know, we're losing it. And so tell me how some of the artists have approached this. Well, what does some of the artwork look like? Is it landscapes with missing parts? How are people approaching it? Have you seen the works?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. No. The opening is tonight, and we're going to be heard by people after the opening. But I've seen some since I put many of the images up on the web. And they range from very colorful cutout flowers, which is a hopeful look, to a pastel vision of just children's legs with water coming up to their knees, called waiting.
Wow.
Waiting, not waiting.
Uh-huh.
So there's some kind of elusive things. And then there's one fire and ice. And it really runs the gamut. Mine is called Take Shelter, and it's kind of an impressionistic whirlwind of destruction, to put too fine a point on it. So it runs the gamut.
Then, you know, that's really interesting. I mean, a lot of people think climate change is just something people have just started talking about since Obama came into office in some ways. Right. But when you think about Pete Seeger's song, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? We've been watching this diminishment of our nature for decades.
One of the pieces at the museum show is by Diane Newton, and the title escapes me at the moment, but something about a parking lot in Boston and about what it used to be, and now it is indeed just a parking lot. And so it's a picture of nature, but it's actually nature now covered over by cement.
Are people at the art gallery and the museum prepared to talk to people who say they don't believe this, and why are you worried? I mean, look at it. I mean, we hear it from half the politicians in Washington that they don't think it's man-made for sure, and a lot of people don't believe it's even happening.
There are some people in Ithaca. I know them, and I like them as people. I can't imagine the discussion, but I think we'd certainly be prepared to talk about it. I don't know if this is off the subject or not, but I don't think it is. I don't know if you've been watching the new Cosmos series.
I've heard a lot about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm. Well, my husband and I have been watching the new one, and Jack was close friends with Carl Sagan when their boys were young. And I remember the old one, and Jack said something very interesting about the difference between the old and the new, which is that Sagan and his wife, Andrianne, were very committed to the political message in that show. It wasn't a defense of science against religion or ignorance, which is what the modern one really is. It was a plea against nuclear weapons, fear of nuclear winter. And that was a theme that ran throughout. And it was a very strong call to action by a scientist delivered in this beautiful cinematic way, which was very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And what about the current one? Is it more in your face?
No, it's not in your face at all. Mm. It's much more subtle. It's much more toned down. I think it's directed at a younger audience. And it's more, isn't this cool, which astronomy intrinsically is, and our place in the cosmos and so on. But it's not at all, it doesn't, to me, contain a political message the way the older one did. Now, whether you agree with that message or not, this is what you're asking, Tish. I mean, if we're going to have to defend a political stance, I think, to me, it's the issue of our lives,
our
and our children's
time.
Lives.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah. Talk to us more about how the museum is addressing this. I mean, they're not just addressing climate change.
No. As a matter of fact, because we do deal with issues of evolution, we have a very committed core group of volunteers, and we've actually been written up in the New York Times about our work with training volunteers about how to interact with people who come in and say, you know, have issues with evolution or believe something different than what the scientists believe. Yeah. So for this example, and actually we probably, you know, could bring in the artists and have them come talk to the volunteers. Our show just went up, I think, on Wednesday. So, and we do have a panel in the works. There's no date to be determined, but certainly, you know, the scientists are prepared to discuss, you know, opposing views. But the volunteers do get that a lot, and we do have training on how to respond to people who feel like it is or is not.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of my personal work at the museum, I mean, I deal with that with donors. I deal with that with people who, you know, even though the supporters of PRI, they still, some of them do indeed, don't believe in common thought.
And do you ever get people coming into the museums asking why you don't have a creationist, you know, aspect to your educational arm?
We do, not so much. Ironically, a couple of years ago, the governor of Texas came out and said some interesting stuff. And this is probably the most politically out on a limb we get. We sent an email out to our database about what he said and how if you make a donation, because we need to combat this type of thought because this is not science.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three people cancel,
really?
You know, which is interesting because they're in our database for some reason and maybe because of that. But we also got two donations out of it. So I'm very pleased.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Barbara Mink and Elizabeth Brando. We're discussing the issue of climate change in conjunction with the anniversaries of State of the Art Gallery and Museum of the Earth. Let's talk about the anniversaries and how you're going to deal with them. I can't believe the Museum of the Earth's only been there for 10 years.
I know.
Absolutely.
Tell us what else you're going to do to commemorate.
So we decided to make this a year-long celebration, starting with our board and our gala last May. So this weekend, May 3rd and 4th, is almost like the capstone with this project, with the State of the Art Gallery. We wanted to do something big, so the Laurie Anderson concert, which we did in conjunction with the State Theater and the State of the Art Gallery back in September. The actual anniversary was September 25th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And we had this huge public, 10 hours of free programming back in September, which was a big public. And then we've just kind of talked about it throughout the year. We sponsored the Philip Glass Show at the State Theater as well. So it's just been, you know, up front in people's minds, in the public's minds, in the community's minds. It's been fantastic. I mean, over 10 years, we think that probably 350,000 people have come to the museum, which is fantastic. PRI has been around for almost 80 years. Warren Allman has been our director for 20 years.
That's a big commitment.
But before the museum, and people still remember when they came in to look at, the Girl Scout troop came in into the old building, and on the second floor there were some dioramas and some stuff, you know, and people still remember that. And now we have this beautiful award-winning, architecturally stunning museum. Kind of in conjunction, I can't really say that it was in celebration of the anniversary, but also in 2013, we merged with the Cayuga Nature Center.
Right.
And that, back getting back to climate change, that gives us, you know, 100 acres of outdoor education and environmental education. So you've got fossils at the museum, and then you can come out and see live animals at the Nature Center, and you can see evolution right there before your eyes.
You know, I think that's an important aspect of this, too. You do need to show people what you're talking about when you're talking about climate change and how the Earth is changing and what's causing it. You have to show people the science in some ways.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the anniversary of the art gallery.
Well, 2014 is the 25th anniversary, and when I was chair of the county board, I remember issuing a proclamation for the gallery's 10th anniversary, and now we're getting a proclamation for our 25th from Chairman Mike Lane.
Yeah.
We'll receive it on Tuesday.
Wow.
And Mayor Myrick has issued a proclamation declaring May 17th State of the Art Day, so that's kind of fun.
Is this one of the oldest galleries in Ithaca? I haven't been here long enough to know whether it is or not. Is it?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, there's no question.
And how has it changed through the last 25 years? Have you been a member all that time?
No, I only started painting in 99, so I joined a couple of years later. But some wonderful artists have been in and out. The physical space has never looked better. And the membership is just terrific. People are interested, always evolving and growing as artists, trying new things. This themed show, for example, was a very new thing, and people just loved taking part. So it continues to grow and to flourish. As many private galleries have gone out of business, new ones are popping up at the community corners and so on.
Yeah,
so it's it's an art-loving town, and of course, Art Trail continues to grow. So
when you decided to take on this issue of climate change, did the whole organization of artists get together and have big, long discussions and arguments about it? To tell us how that process happened.
I'll tell you exactly.
Happened.
The answer is no. No. Elizabeth and I hatched this, and she did the heavy lifting in terms of getting funding, and I presented it as a remarkable opportunity, and everyone said, great.
And they had a time frame, though, right?
Yes.
And artists aren't usually used to that kind of thing, I would think.
Yes, and there's a little bit of last-minute panic, you know, making sure the oil paint dries, but you know, we'll have ventilation.
Well, tell us what your process was on how you were going to approach this as an artist, though. I mean, you ended up with a piece, obviously.
Well, I actually have a few.
Thinking about?
Yeah. Well, my first one actually was after we had first talked, and in a way it's a study, but it's a piece in itself, that I call Boomtown, The Two Sides of Fracking. And it's kind of an ambiguous big thing in the background that could either be a huge tree or a cloud from an explosion. And there's a little landscape in the background, and it's relatively abstract. And that was my experiment with trying to take on a theme, because I think fracking is a very important. I know the museum is very involved in explaining the science of fracking.
Talk to you about that,
great concern. And then beyond that, Take Shelter, thinking about a dystopic look. My piece up at the museum is called Vanishing Point, which is ending in fire. I'm not sanguine about the future. I think it's coming faster than we're prepared for.
Mm.
And going back to something Elizabeth said before about what we can do, or maybe you said it, Tish, I'm sorry, about what you can do as individuals, there's only so much one can do. To me, the main responsibility is to actually know what you're talking about and get educated.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, you have to get involved politically and make sure that people who have the ability to make decisions make them.
Yeah, yeah. And talk to us about what the museum is dealing with in regard to fracking.
Absolutely.
It's contentious in this community, obviously.
That it is. I just wanted to get in that one thing, you know, do what you can do as an individual. There's also do what you can do with joining a community.
Exactly.
You know, and do what you can do to get educated. I mean, one thing that we don't want is for people to just give up.
Right.
You know, and that's probably for any issue that's troubling or just seems overwhelming. I mean, there is small impacts that do add up. So in regards to drilling for natural gas, we do not take a stance for or against. You know, we are scientists, we are geologists. We were funded by the NSF, the National Science Foundation, to produce some papers about the science behind the Marcellus Shale. And now that's come out in a book available on our website. But we do a lot of community outreach, and we do a lot of teaching teachers to teach geology and to teach the science behind, and to teach educators about how to work with the public and work with their students about how to become educated about these very polarizing issues. So we do not have a stance. And even though everybody wants us to have a stance, unfortunately, maybe beyond the scope of this conversation, but unfortunately, if you don't take a stance, you know, the other side says, must mean that they're pro, pro-fracking. And then the other side says, no, they're pro-natural gas
drilling.
It's
a tough town.
Yes. So we've done, we just had a huge press event. We actually just did a teacher workshop where teachers got certified in this. So
I'm glad to hear that because there's so much sloganeering going on in regard to almost any political issue now. And people don't know what they're talking about. You're exactly right. That's why, I'm glad that there's an education component going on without taking a stand, because that would polarize people as well.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, they're pro. I don't want to listen to them now.
Definitely this issue. There is absolutely no way you're going to change what they're thinking, regardless if they read the papers or not, for both sides, And what we're hoping to do is reach the people. I can think of a community leader right now. She's very well respected. She's a lovely person. She's like, I don't even quite know the facts. Thank you for helping me. Then I can make my own educated decision about whether I'm for or against. I mean, energy, when you think about it, and one of our scientists, Dr. Don Dugenhaus, travels the nation talking about this. I mean, how do we get our energy is difficult no matter what the form is.
Yeah,
so the bigger picture is how to reduce your impact on the environment, which goes way beyond just pro or anti.
Yeah, and then that's where you can educate people to be, just individually involved with things like recycling. And
absolutely.
So the small things that people can do, and the people who are in charge of educating are the museums and the artists, it seems.
And the educational institutions. I mean, I teach up in the business school, and one of the things I do every year is have the business students have stage debates, formal debates, just to be able to have a point of view and to defend it without histrionics or name-calling or anything else. And, the business school is full of many students and professors who are involved in sustainable energy and sustainable economic approaches. So there's a lot going on, but I think people are afraid to stick their neck out and have a point of view. I think it's very important to have a point of view.
It's too bad you're training business people and not politicians to learn how to argue without becoming hysterical.
Yes.
Because that seems to be the way the discourse is in our country right now. Well, why do you think art is such a great vehicle in regard to teaching and issue-wise and helping to teach science? I mean, that's not really a new phenomenon.
Art is usually used to illustrate science. One of the difficulties we've talked about in years past with the concept of light and winter with art and science as collaboration is that usually it's one in the service of another, and it's usually art in the service of science as a way to make things visceral and visible and comprehensible. But beyond that, when you just see artists wrestling with issues, it can make you think differently about things. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about small bore changes. If it changes one person's way of thinking and makes him or her curious to find out more, that's a beginning, that's a start. And that to me is all artists really can do. Mm-hmm. It starts with educating yourself and then expressing it and see how people react.
Yeah.
We started in the beginning talking about different points of entry, different ways for people to get a spark of interest.
One of the interesting things to come out of this collaboration was the day after Laurie Anderson performed at the State Theater, we had this really incredible artist panel. It was more like an artist conversation. And Laurie Anderson was definitely, I do not want to be on a panel. I do not want to be on a panel. I want to be part of a conversation. So we had, it was moderated by Barbara, and I hope you can tell us a little bit more. It was incredible. It was John Gertchi, our artist in residence. It was Dr. Roel Hoffman, who is known for his, his science work, but he's also a playwright, and he does science cabaret. John and Barbara
and Lori Anderson, yeah.
And it was this incredible hour-long conversation about exactly that, about how art illuminates science and science can inform art. We have a transcript of the conversation up on our website because it's just, it's incredible and incredible. Maybe
did it change your thinking, Barbara, about art and how you approach it in any way? Because you've also been involved in politics. You've done it all. Mm.
No, I can't say it changed my view, but I was interested to see the varying comfort levels of different people who were involved in the conversation. Roald Hoffman has always been very upfront about his political interests and using poetry and play writing to express them. Laurie Anderson is more oblique. She didn't want to be pinned down in terms of an artist's responsibility as a citizen, which was an awkward way for me to have phrased the question. So she was right to reject it. But just de facto, what she does is explore these issues and let people come to them by themselves.
Yeah, she
which
seems
I think
very
is,
political
is fine.
To me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, she seems that way, but she doesn't stand on a soapbox, I like.
Well, she wraps poetry and music around a soapbox sometimes, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Did this collaboration make the gallery and any of the members think that you might want to do this again with an arts and science collaboration?
Oh, I would love to. I think it's been terrific for everybody involved.
Yeah. So they're not intimidated now by the thought of a theme, you know? You said earlier that some people were a little freaked out about
it. I can't speak for everyone, but I doubt it. I think it's been a good experience.
Yeah. Did you want to add anything, Elizabeth?
Oh, I just think it would be incredible. I might have said earlier it would be fun to do this type of show based on energy consumption.
Right,
Again,
yeah.
And to broaden it beyond fracking versus drilling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I can think of a number
human
of
human evolution. I mean, that.
And also some of the food deserts and the hungers that's still happening in this mm-hmm. country. I can see that being a theme. I was thinking about that this morning. Well, we're almost out of time. I would love it if you guys could give some contact information for your organization so people could get in touch, find out more about the exhibit.
Well, I can't really give phone numbers off the top of my head.
What about the State of the Art Gallery?
But the State of the Art Gallery is at 120 West State Street, right across from the State Theater. The website is soag.org. And the Earth Show is featured on the website, and we have a link to the museum. And they have links to us,
okay, so
that would be a good place. And people should really come down. We're open Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah. And Elizabeth, what about contact for PRI, for the Museum of the Earth, all those places?
Sure. Our website is museumoftheearth.org. And for this specific collaboration, there is museumoftheearth.org/earth to make it very easy. And the museum is located at 1259 Trumansburg Road.
In Ithaca, right?
In Ithaca.
In Ithaca. Well, Elizabeth Brando and Barbara Mink, thank you so much for joining me. We've been talking about climate change, the collaboration between Museum of the Earth and the State of the Art Gallery. Thank you so much. I hope these collaborations continue.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Tish.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.